fashion door in a pretty cabinet.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, before we went to break, we were talking about what's going on in Ukraine and also some overtures that have been kind of sent out by the U.S. defense chief, who vowed to help Taiwan defend itself against China. And you and I were talking off the air. You know, this is what we've done in many other nations. And I know the American people do not want to know about the history of what we've done in meddling in the affairs of other nations. It's kind of what our foreign policy has always consisted of.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the history since World War II, we've almost not gone a year without some kind of military involvement of some scale, very modest sometimes,
right. But
in other countries, you know, in Somalia,
we're still involved in Grenada,
in the Philippines, in Dominican Republic, in all these places, and basically when we are involved there, and I would call much of it at the scale of meddling.
Yeah.
You know, we're basically sticking our nose into that business for some reason. We never really walk away with the capability of holding our head up and saying, see, we went there and now they've got a democratic regime in power that they wouldn't have had in power. In fact, typically when we leave those places, it's at least as much chaos as we found. But so that's why I call it meddling, because we might go in with good intentions, but they don't seem to play out that way.
Right.
But secondly, we're always fighting way down in weight, right? I mean, you talk about a heavyweight fighting a flyweight. You know?
Right.
So, you know, we're meddling in some place in the world where the risk to the United States is quite low.
I like the analogy, by the way.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're punching down. And now, when we start meddling in Ukraine, we're finding out that we're punching somewhere in the same weight class, right, with Russia.
Right.
So that's a problem. If we get into Taiwan, we're talking probably punching up, you know. You know, we can say we have this mighty, mighty military, but do we really want to put it to the test? I mean, do we really want to test all the ways in which our military is supreme? Because most of the ways that our military is supreme involves very very destructive kinds of wars. Our ability to carry out a ground war against another country fully capable of carrying out a ground war successfully
on their turf
is we don't have advantages in that regard, okay? And so and particularly a highly technologically advanced country like China, which, you know, has developed 5G ahead of us, has developed drone technology ahead of us, has lots of has artificial intelligence that seems to be ahead of us. All of those things are great in the civilian world. They're pretty spectacular in terms of in the military world, how they might create a difference in capability. So, you know, I just think that the American public ought to sit up and be very alert to how it is we might be deciding to meddle in other countries' interests when we, for instance, are goading and supporting Taiwan in a separatist movement from China.
You know, Sandy, and the one thing we may not be able to, Democrats and Republicans for the most part, to see eye to eye on certain things, but this interfering in other nations' sovereignty is both a Democrat and a Republican reality.
Well, and the problem is that there's nuances, you know. Lou from Cudahy and CJ and others who are, you know, they're patriots. They're worried, and they talk about how it is that we need to defend democracy wherever it's being under assault, and that Taiwan is a democracy that's under assault. Well, Taiwan is an autonomous region of China. Is essentially, from an international law standpoint, that's what it is. We've agreed to the one China policy. There's plenty of parts of China that are not altogether democratic in the way they're being run, and we aren't helping them secede from China. And for us to be helping and goading Taiwan into seceding from China, it's the people there who there are people there who call themselves separatists. You don't call yourself a separatist unless you're in a country that you want to separate yourself from. And so even the Taiwanese recognize that they're part of China, and that if they were to leave it, it would be separatism, much the way the people in Texas who want to leave the United States talk about secession. And if or let's say Puerto Rico. Let's say that Puerto Rico, tired of being the stepchild, the unfortunate stepchild of the United States, continues to be treated as a territory but not well-treated, continues to have all the lack of federal attention that they want, continues to have paper towels thrown to them when they're having a massive hurricane, and decides, you know what, China's come to us and said they'd like to help us. And they'll help us in a far more profound way than you, the United States, are helping us. How would we react to that?
You know, Sandy, we'll move on from here, but I am more and more fearful the more I see the developments in Ukraine. And in, you know, the fact that Ukraine is pushing back, and there's these celebratory things because they don't know what's coming. And clearly, you know, what Putin has in store is going to be horrific. And as it relates to deaths.
Well, particularly the more we push Putin into a desperate internal political position, I mean, it's the more we push towards Russian instability, the more we should expect that the outcome is not going to be favorable in terms of the behavior of Russia, in terms of being predictably rational. And, you know, one of the important things in international affairs is that your opponents be predictably rational, and that rationality underlie their actions. I would say this. I think the danger we have in America right now is that we're letting domestic debate and policy, domestic discussions control foreign affairs without educating the people who are involved in that discussion or debate about foreign affairs. So we've got this machismo outlook about the United States and the world and all the things that the United States should and could be accomplishing in the world that don't intersect with the reality of the world, the real politic in the world, and the real interest of the United States in the world. And as a result of that, I can foresee that we can step into some serious quicksand.
Yeah, and you just see it building, right? You see it building more and more.
Well, the domestic talk, CJ talking about how Nancy Pelosi has demonstrated much more machismo than the president because she went to Taiwan, and you know this notion that this is a game of machismo, and we have to show how big our sword is, so to speak, and that will if we can keep China at bay in that fashion, that'd be great. Well, what if we can't? You know, what if that game is not one that China's willing to participate in the circumstance of their Puerto Rico being taken by their version of China?
And what is the cost that the American people are willing to give up in that kind of a game, right? I mean, whatever it is, and dealing with what's happening, who would have ever imagined, Sandy, that we would be on the precipice dealing with Russia and China possibly at the same time? Right? This is not Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
Right? So we could deal with Iraq and Afghanistan at the same time.
Well, what's interesting to me is we seem to be stimulating it in both fronts. You know, we seem to be deciding that this is the time to excite Taiwan into more and goad them into essentially more aggressively asserting separatism. And why are we doing that?
So Sandy, last thing, and then we can move on. At the same time that we are these great partners in business with China, I mean, we're partners when it comes to business. So why would we be pushing the other thing?
To be honest with you, I don't understand it. And so, you know, somebody in the bowels of Washington, in the intellectual center of game theory associated with how we decide what we're going to do, has a theory about why this is a good idea. And I don't know whether it's driven by financial interests or whether it's what it's driven by. But it to me. Whenever we start beating the drums hard about wanting to defend democracy someplace where it has never been defended before, where we haven't defended it before, and where it hasn't eroded substantially from what it was before, I ask myself, why have we started beating that drum today? You know, what's the reason for doing something today which we could have been doing 15 or 20 years ago? The fact is that China has moderated itself very materially from what it was like in 1985, and it was very moderated in 2015. It has tightened itself in terms of the way it is operating, in terms of the level of autocratic control and the level of potential oppression is tightening some, but it seems like it's a pendulum there.
And if you really thought about it, Sandy... what has China really ever done to the United States historically? China remembers some of the things that we've done historically that impacted and affected China, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's at the root of all of this. And I just think the American people don't know a lot about the history of these things. And they do matter, right? It does matter historically what has happened in the relationships between our two nations.
Yeah.
And now China has gotten itself up off the mat, so to speak, and they've got one eye open.
Well, China has implemented a process inside China that has been, by all accounts, miraculous in terms of what it has accomplished for China over the past 35 years. And so we can stand outside and say there's autocratic repression ongoing in China. We can't need to worry about that.
All right, we got to move on. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Recommended at the price, insatiable in appetite.
To the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And I'm sorry, Sandy, that I've been just... These things I just had to get out of the way. Last thing before we go.
What? You aren't going to talk about that Chinese sympathetic wife of the China sympathizer
who's... So how is it possible, Sandy, that you can be a Republican or conservative, and Mitch McConnell has been a good conservative? He's been a guy who has always fought for their views, always stood up for what was right for Republicans. Nobody can question that, right? He was always that guy. And then a guy named Donald Trump has basically turned him out.
Well, he said in all caps in a tweet that he has a death wish. That certainly looked like an assignment
Sandy.
To somebody. And then accused his Taiwanese-born wife, who's an American businesswoman, of being a Chinese sympathizer. The whole thing was... remarkable, and it's sort of remarkable in that Donald Trump is so good at playing with fear and taking fears of various things.
Or manipulating
and
people.
And manipulating people with it, okay? And so all of that is just, those are strings on the instrument. The problem with Donald Trump is that while he seems like an unsophisticated fool, I think his theories on manipulating people is a multi-stringed instrument. I think it's a fairly sophisticated process that he goes through to understand exactly how to evoke sort of the worst sides of everyone. And by worst, I don't mean that it's a worst impulse, but fear is a source of a great deal of negative conduct.
Sandy, for any person in this country to do what he just did in capital letters.
Yeah.
Make a threat. Because that's what that was.
He would assert, see, he's pretty good at the deniability thing. He would say, oh, that was just a political.
I know what he says.
Yeah.
But you and I and others know that's a threat. And for the fourth most powerful person in this government to make a threat.
No, to have a threat made against him.
Yes.
McConnell.
Yeah,
right.
To have a threat made against him. Man, that's more than news.
Well, you'd think so, but I hate the notion of spending news time, and this is just talk time,
right,
on Donald Trump. But I do think that, and one of the sort of the general subjects I was hoping to discuss today,
which we're going to do after,
which
this,
which was sort of like, okay, what is it that we Americans find so
great segue?
We find so fearful about one another that has polarized us, and it's happening all around the world. I was listening to the news about the election yesterday in Brazil, and how it is that now there's going to be a runoff because the liberal left guy who was expected to beat the incumbent right-wing guy failed to get more than 50% of the vote. Now it's going to come down to a runoff, and it's clearly going to be a relatively close election in a very big, it's I think the second most numerous in terms of vote count so-called democracy in the world. And And the conservative is already talking about alleging that the vote has been stolen, fraudulently taken. He's talked about the voting machines in Brazil being subject to being rigged. There's a playbook here, and the same playbook is being played there, and the parties are about as far apart from one another as they are here. There's already been a killing of a backer of the liberal by a conservative in Brazil, so they're at a high degree of polarization and antipathy to one another, and you know what? So are we in America. And so my question, as I think about it, is what is it that makes, for instance, the conservative so fearful of what they would describe as the woke progressive? And I've seen discussion from the right about how the woke progressives are going to install a government that is going to be a left-wing government that will take away their civil liberties. And then on the right, from the left, I see the left's fear of the right as being kind of the mirror image, that it's a right-wing government that's going to install an autocracy, that has a nominal leader of the movement right now, Donald Trump, who clearly wants to be an autocrat, and that it's going to overturn the Constitution. In fact, there are 19 states that want to essentially overturn the existing Constitution and turn it into a more conservative Constitution. So the parties on both sides are worried about the loss of the American government. And I'm wondering whether that's really what they're worried about or whether it's something else.
So, Sandy, the Donald Trump group of Republicans are concerned about the Democrats overturning the Constitution. That's what Donald Trump is doing.
Well, I know. I'm just saying we talk that way. But my view is that people talk like sheep, but they are wolves, okay? So when they talk about overturning the Constitution, that's what they're giving they're giving lip service to something like that. But that isn't what they're really afraid of, okay? Now, I do think that The right has persuaded itself that somehow the left will install big government that by definition will be oppressive. And the right is ignoring the fact that what they want is an autocrat who by definition is like the definition of oppressive government usually comes in line with autocrats.
Okay. All right, we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You want to join in that conversation, now's the time. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And so, Sandy, before we went to break, you laid out a subject that I think really is at the root of this divide in this country. And whether or not people are willing to even see it, right? And then willing to have a truthful dialogue about what it is, I think is what's at the root of this divide that you and I are talking about. Let's talk a little bit about it before we...
What prompted me to think about this was the sort of... I thought Friday's session with the call-ins was kind of unpleasant, and I wondered, why does it always have to turn into a partisan discussion where the people calling in feel like they're supporting the conservatives and we're supporting liberals and that it's all about the next election?
Yeah, there has to be a war.
And it's all about talking the talking points that relate to the next election, you know, who caused inflation or whatever, you know. And as I listen to the world news, there's inflation all over the world, and the inflation we're experiencing is less
lighter than the others.
Than the other countries, but we ignore that in the whole discussion. We just connect dots, and then the discussion frequently comes around to the Constitution, and you know, liberals are worried that the right wants to install a dictator, essentially an autocrat that clearly would be contrary to the Constitution. The right always wants to test the edge of the constitutional restrictions on the power that's trying to be executed by the executive, because they want the executive power to be as broad as possible in this whole concept. And so there's all kinds of constitutional pushing ongoing from the right with respect to changing the view of what things are on the left, and yet their concern is that the left is going to install some oppressive government that's going to be removing constitutional rights. And which ones? Well, they point at the freedom of religion, for instance. Somehow that there's been conduct to date that suggests that. The only conduct I've seen has been an effort on the part of people to avoid the installation of, for instance, Christian religion things into public places, which is consistent with making sure that there is not a connection between the church and the state, which is all part of the fundamental part of freedom of religion. You know, most people would say that freedom of religion is the freedom to exercise your religious rights privately,
right,
and to carry out your religious rights as you choose, but not to impose them, okay?
Yeah.
And this debate would be much more interestingly framed if we also had the Quran and portions of the Quran being proposed to be posted in schools in various places, because then, of course, the left's concern has been that with too many immigrants, we'd have the imposition of Sharia law, which is not a lot different than the imposition of Christian law, I guess. I mean, when you think about it.
You know, Sandy, it is so frustrating to me that those folk on the right who are talking about secession states. These are the people talking about the Constitution.
Yeah, they're also talking about revising the Constitution. Yeah. I mean, there are movements in 19 states to try and have a constitutional convention for the purpose of revising the Constitution to make it more conservative. Now, if there were 19 states that were wanting to revise the Constitution to make it more liberal, and for instance, to install socialistic, more like government ownership of things as being constitutional, they would be a lot of concern about that, and a lot of hue and cry, and a lot of concern that that was un-American. Why is it more American to make the Constitution conservative, more conservative, than it is to try and make it more left-leaning if what you're trying to do is change America to look like the vision that you want America to be?
Well, I got just a guy to answer that for you, none other than CJ.
Ah, okay.
Good morning, CJ. How you doing? You heard, the conversation. What are your thoughts?
Well, thank you, Earl and Sandy, for taking my call. You gentlemen are one of the few hosts that still take my call, but I do appreciate it. As I listen to Sandy try to represent what conservatives believe, I get so frustrated because you always tie it to Donald Trump.
He didn't say that.
Actually, CJ, let's not get it. I am just talking about conservative concepts. I'm not. The 19 states, the movement in 19 states has nothing to do with Donald Trump. Nothing that I've talked about has, because Donald Trump never talks about policy at all. No, he's never talked about policy. I guess he talked about a tax reduction at the time it was being implemented, but... If you want to talk about policy, that's fine. I'm not interested in talking about Donald Trump.
Okay, good, because neither am I. As a conservative, I want laws enforced. We now heard the vice president respond to a question that she wants equity to be involved in hurricane relief. We've heard the representatives from this administration that the border is secure.
So let me ask you something.
I drove home. I drove home Friday very unhappy with the session because we have decided to have these panels and to have people call in. But then the panels, instead of us trying to talk about an issue, we end up having a political dialogue that's all about people running for office or at least contending on behalf of liberals and conservatives. I'm not interested in that conversation. I'm interested in the discussion of issues and how it is whether we have a problem and what the problem is and then what the proper way to deal with that problem is. You have now brought up a discussion that has nothing to do with anything we've talked about this morning. Not a single sentence of what you just described.
How can you say that?
Well, I can because...
That is so untrue.
No, it is. No, well, listen, the listeners, any other listener can decide whether it's true or not. We were talking about what it is that might be at the heart of the misunderstanding between conservatives and liberals with respect to their view of fears about what it is that's going to happen to the Constitution if one side or the other takes control, and whether those fears are realistic or not. And so that was the nature of the conversation that I was trying to instigate, not what it is that Kamala Harris might have said yesterday or whatever. You know, those things are not the basis for a discussion about policy issues.
Well, as a conservative, I want laws enforced. Period.
Okay. So, well, who doesn't?
Well, wait.
As a progressive and liberals, as I've watched them, they pick and choose which laws from the top on down, which laws they want enforced. period.
Oh, now wait, let's talk about how the various people have looked at laws. There are laws in place that relate to environmental controls that are laws, okay? And then they are implemented pursuant to regulations. And there's lots of consternation about those that form along party lines with respect to how those laws should be enforced or not. And there are plenty of other arguments. So I just think that's disingenuous, CJ, to say that, because you do want laws enforced, but you prefer that some laws be enforced and that some others be reevaluated at least.
Well, I want them enforced until they're reevaluated.
I see.
So that's the mere difference.
No, I don't think so. Tell me this: which laws are not being enforced in the current situation? Tell me some laws that you think have not been enforced that should be enforced. You know, you're going to talk about the border, okay? The border is a factual circumstance that involves the border essentially being overrun. And the border laws weren't being enforced entirely by the Trump administration. They were being enforced. There was more effort being put into place to pursue enforcement of various kinds, maybe. But it's not true that the laws were being enforced in their entirety. They haven't been because they can't be.
Well, look at the sheer numbers.
Okay, I don't want to have that debate. CJ, let's just
those are laws that I want enforced.
Okay, you've got.
We're going to do a song and a dance. Your party is ignoring that there's even an issue.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to vote against accepting your calls. If what we're going to have every time we talk is my party and your party, and then a discussion of the talking points of the party, because quite frankly, I am not a party participant, and I have tried my hardest for the years I've been on this show to never use talking points. Okay, I have tried my best to isolate. I have tried my best to isolate issues and facts and to talk about facts. Do you think that my discussion of Ukraine or China or anything like that is towing the line of any party in the United States right now? Do you think I'm speaking talking points? I'm not. Okay?
Well, I've heard you defend this administration on what they're doing.
What I've talked about, for instance, on inflation, is to try and talk about the many sources and causes of inflation that there are, and that it's silly to try and simplify it down to pointing the finger at the incumbent. Just as I said the same when Trump was the incumbent, I pointed out at that point, quite frankly, that all of the prosperity at that time was being put in jeopardy by the policies he was pursuing, including the tax decrease.
So at the onset of our discussion this morning, CJ, Sandy talked about the inflation numbers all over the world and them being higher, broader all over the world than they are in this nation. You didn't hear that, did you?
Policies that were in place, and maybe he did, and I did hear some of that, but you know, when I ask him a direct question, he dances around and never answers it.
Well, CJ,
CJ, your version. I'm going to get this out just because there are people, listeners, and they always say, "Why do you take calls from CJ? He's so difficult."
Which is why the other hosts have ignored him.
That what is difficult is the fact that your version of a question is to say, "Sandy, is the border of Mexico out of control or not?" And I have told you that I thought that both parties had an interest in having more control over the border than currently exists. I've said that both parties have recognized that there is an issue at the border that needs to be addressed. I've said that there have been bipartisan efforts to do it, which have always failed.
Never bring up on day one, Sandy, that on day one of this president, he wrote an executive order or signed an executive order to stop building.
CJ, that's not an argument. He did sign that order. No, he did sign such an order, and it did happen. End of discussion. Okay, what's the point? You want me? You want to recite that fact not so that I'll agree that it happened. You want to recite that fact so you can say it for the 26th time in the 26th call that you make.
It's the same thing.
It just doesn't move us forward, CJ. So as far as I'm concerned, I think you're a fine person, and I think we ought to have conversations that can be conversations, but it is very silly for us to have a conversation that is repetitive and simply includes 15 talking points like Sandy. Did Biden sign on his first day in office the order? Yeah, okay, yes, he did. All right. End of discussion.
$1 billion on fines to contractors that aren't building our wall.
Okay.
So
that doesn't make sense.
So saying
almost $1 billion.
Okay. So listen, CJ, we got to go. Thank you very much for the call.
I appreciate your
Thank you very much for the call, man. The issue is, CJ, you don't deal with the questions that you are being asked. It's not the CJ show, which means you can't direct the questions. Got to go to the break. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams, the best hours in radio anywhere. I got a text message that said I needed to go back to that. So I'll go back to it. The best hours in radio anywhere, Sandy Williams. You know, let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, good morning, Bill. Do you understand what, without having to even, talk about CJ, do you understand what Sandy was talking about, these differences between conservatives and the progressives and how we get that thing worked out?
Well, it becomes the one word, understanding and respect. You and Sandy respect CJ, but he doesn't respect you guys. He talks over you, he shouts at you, and he keeps repeating something that doesn't bear worth repeating. If CJ wants to be an integral part of the show, and I think he already is, learn to listen, CJ. Give the Earl and Sandy time to speak and digest what they're telling you. Don't listen to what Fox tells you to say. That's where you get these talking points, or whatever talking Republican head you listen to, whether it's Dan O'Donnell or Fox. Bottom line on the immigrants, I call it an abomination what this country does to them. You know, I live in Oconomowoc. We had a horrible hailstorm. There's crews from Mexico all over our town. Yet these very same people don't want illegal immigrants coming into our state, city, wherever. Well, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be eating the food we eat. We wouldn't have a roof on our heads because they'd be so backed up because Americans don't want to do this. They're an asset. And what I find so almost funny was DeSantis and Abbott, when they sent these buses up here, they actually helped those people.
They were received
with open arms.
Hey, Bill, let me ask you this, because and what Sandy, the point Sandy was trying to make in all of this is this divide between the conservatives and progressives that is doesn't appear to ever be able to be fixed. You here's a prime example. Ron DeSantis and conservative senators and conservative House members voted against appropriations to help other states that suffered through some crises. They voted no. But then when this happened in Florida, they now all of a sudden want to vote for support. Well, I mean, if you don't support the need that the other nations have, I mean the other states have, be they blue states or whatever, and then when your turn comes up, you forget about all the rest of that, and you say, well, we've got to do this. You know, Rick Scott and others like him voted no when it came time. And what's the other guy's name? Senator Marco Rubio. They voted no for appropriations to help fund other states that were in trouble. But now, when their state is in trouble, they want everybody to feel their pain. I don't understand how you can, it can be both ways, Bill. You know, well, we're Republicans, and so we're against that kind of aid to others.
Well, I think there's always this discussion about aid, or for instance, the argument against socialism. People say that's socialistic, but they're happy to use parks, and they're happy to do all the things that actually are the result of, you know, I mean, those are exercises in what some people would call socialism. And in fact, it was the socialist government of Milwaukee that sort of started this whole public park thing in such a big way. So I think it's the problem is that sauce for the goose isn't always sauce for the gander, and people want to describe the government is bad and is giving handouts unless the handout happens to be into my hand.
That's what I'm talking about, Sandy.
So, for instance, the triple P loan program that existed during the pandemic was taken advantage of by plenty of conservatives, which was clearly a government program. It was an exercise of big government doing something that they might well have voted against. So I think that's just the problem of human nature and hypocrisy. What I was trying to get at was the bigger problem, which is this fear-mongering that has conservatives afraid that liberals are going to change change America in such dramatic ways that it's an unacceptable form of America as far as they're concerned. And I think liberals have persuaded themselves that and maybe with some help from the conservatives, that conservatives are going to try and change America in some ways that are unacceptable and will create an unacceptable America. So we are now in a situation where the polar sides of our government have persuaded one another that they need, it's almost like a civil war. If those guys get control, America is going to disappear as we know it, and we need to fight tooth and nail to stop that from happening. And that is what is creating things like the January 6th insurrection and this belief that the ends justify the means, that whatever ends we need to pursue to keep those guys from grabbing hold of America and destroying it is our patriotic duty.
Well, because they made this a war.
Well,
enemies.
Yes, but we've joined into it, and maybe, like I've said with respect to foreign affairs, if someone describes you as their enemy, they are your enemy. That's the way war games are played. That's the way it's played. Okay, if I'm your enemy, then you are my enemy because I've got to worry about you and treat you that way. And so what's happened to the parties over time is that they have painted one another as the enemy. And you don't have to go to who did it first. We're there.
So, go ahead, Bill.
Well, you know what's interesting in all that? It can be fixed. Nothing is hopeless. It's only hopeless if you want it to be hopeless. But to change this divide we have, we need on both sides more people who can meet in the middle, like Liz Cheney, like Adam Kissinger, and there's a number of Republicans. We need to work with them. The rest, they're welcome to join, but they got to have certain rules, kind of like CJ. I'd love to talk to CJ. I'd buy him lunch. Jack, you could tell him. He comes out to Oconomowoc, gets a hold of me, I'll buy him lunch, and we'll talk, and we'll have a nice bit lunch. I know that if you teach these people to listen and respect and do it in the right way, it works. Like you were just talking about, I'm going to circle back with the immigrants in Florida. I guarantee you Ron DeSantis won't be checking green cards for people that are going to build these houses back up. There's going to be so many immigrants in Florida working on these crews, and you know why they do that? It's because they want to work.
Bill, we got to go to break. Tom, I see you. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.